Thanks for listening to our podcast. We've got more information and additional resources at probe.org/podcast. And be sure to check out our life-changing Summer Mind Games Camp for high school and college students.
If you're seeking the greatest good for the greatest number of people, is that commendable? Kirby Anderson discusses utilitarianism now on Probe.
You have probably heard a politician say he or she passed a piece of legislation because it did the greatest good for the greatest number of citizens. Perhaps you've heard someone justify their actions because it was for the greater good. Well, this week we're going to talk about the philosophy behind such actions. The philosophy is known as utilitarianism. It is the belief that the sole standard of morality is determined by its usefulness. Now, philosophers refer to it as a teleological system. The Greek word telos means end or goal. This means that this ethical system determines morality by the end result. Whereas Christian ethics are based on rules, utilitarianism is based on results. Utilitarianism began with the philosophies of Jeremy Bentham and John Stuart Mill. Utilitarianism gets its name from Bentham's test question, "What is the use of it?" He conceived of the idea when he ran across the words, "the greatest happiness of the greatest number," in Joseph Priestley's Treatise of Government. Now, Jeremy Bentham developed his ethical system around the idea of pleasure. He built it on ancient hedonism, which pursued physical pleasure and avoided physical pain. According to Bentham, the most moral acts are those which maximize pleasure and minimize pain. This has sometimes been called the utilitarian calculus. Now, John Stuart Mill modified this philosophy and developed it apart from Bentham's hedonistic foundation, focusing on maximizing the general happiness by calculating the greatest good for the greatest number. While Bentham used the calculus in a quantitative sense, Mill used his calculus in a qualitative sense. He believed, for example, that some pleasures were of higher quality than others. Now, utilitarianism has been embraced by so many simply because it seems to make a great deal of sense and seems relatively simple to apply. However, when it was first proposed, utilitarianism was a radical philosophy. It attempted to set forth a moral system apart from divine revelation and biblical morality. Utilitarianism focuses on results rather than rules, and ultimately the focus on these results demolishes the rules. In other words, utilitarianism provided for a way for people to live moral lives apart from the Bible and its biblical prescriptions. There is no need for an appeal to divine revelation. Reason rather than revelation was sufficient to determine morality.
You've been listening to Probe with your host, Kirby Anderson. Visit us online at probe.org and get your free copy of Kirby's transcript, Utilitarianism. Your prayers will help us continue to proclaim God's truth, which we will do same time next time here on Probe.
Jeremy Bentham was a leading theorist in Anglo-American philosophy of law and one of the founders of utilitarianism. He developed this idea of a utility and a utilitarian calculus in the Introduction to the Principles of Morals and Legislation. In the beginning of that work, Bentham wrote, "Nature has placed mankind under the governance of two sovereign masters, pain and pleasure. It is for them alone to point out what we ought to do, as well as to determine what we shall do. On the one hand, the standard of right and wrong, on the other, the chain of causes and effects, are fastened to their throne. They govern us in all we do, in all we say, in all we think." Now, Bentham believed that pain and pleasure not only explain our actions, but also help us define what is good and moral. He believed that this foundation could provide a basis for social, legal, and moral reform in society. Now, key to his ethical system is the principle of utility. That is, what is the greatest good for the greatest number? Now, utilitarianism comes in two forms, act utilitarianism and rule utilitarianism. Jeremy Bentham's formulation represents the former, while John Stuart Mill represents the latter. Bentham argued that one can calculate what is right on the basis of comparing the consequence of all relevant agents of alternative acts it is possible to perform in a given circumstance. Now, John Stuart Mill was a brilliant scholar who was subjected to a rigid system of intellectual discipline and shielded from boys his own age. When Mill was a teenager, he read Bentham. Mill said that the feeling rushed upon him that all previous moralists were superseded. He believed that the principle of utility gave unity to my conception of things. I now had opinions, a creed, a doctrine, a philosophy, in one, among the best senses of the word, a religion. the inculcation and diffusion of what could be made the principal outward purpose of a life. Now, Mill also modified Bentham's utilitarianism. Whereas Bentham established an act utilitarianism, Mill established a rule utilitarianism. According to John Stuart Mill, one calculates what is right on the basis of comparing the consequences of all relevant agents of alternative rules for a particular circumstance. This is done by comparing all relevant similar circumstances or settings at any time. Join us tomorrow as we look at the strengths and weaknesses of utilitarianism. Why did utilitarianism become popular? Well, there are a number of reasons for its appeal. First, it is a relatively simple ethical system to apply. If the good outweighs the bad, then the action is moral. Second, utilitarianism avoids the need to appeal to divine revelation. Many adherents to this ethical system are looking for a way to live a moral life apart from the Bible and a belief in God. The system replaces revelation with reason. Third, most people already use a form of utilitarianism in their daily decisions. We make lots of non-moral decisions every day based upon consequences. At the checkout line, we try to find the shortest line so we can get out the door quicker. We make most of our financial decisions, writing checks or buying merchandise, on a utilitarian calculus of cost and benefits. So making moral decisions based upon utilitarianism seems like a natural extension of our daily decision-making procedures. There are also a number of problems with utilitarianism. One problem with utilitarianism is that it leads to an end justifies the means mentality. If any worthwhile end can justify the means to attain it, a true ethical foundation is lost. But we all know that the end does not justify the means. If that were so, then Hitler could justify the Holocaust because the end was to purify the human race. Stalin could justify his slaughter of millions because he was trying to achieve a communist utopia. Second, utilitarianism cannot protect the rights of minorities if the goal is the greatest good for the greatest number. Americans in the 18th century could justify slavery on the basis that it provided a good consequence for a majority of Americans. Certainly, the majority benefited from cheap slave labor, even though the lives of black slaves were much worse. A third problem with utilitarianism is predicting the consequences. If morality is based on results, then we would have to have omniscience in order to accurately predict the consequence of any action. But at best, we can only guess at the future, and often these educated guesses are wrong. A fourth problem with utilitarianism is that consequences themselves must be judged. When results occur, we must ask whether they are good or bad results. Yet the ethical system we must use to judge the results uses results to judge a moral action. Utilitarianism provides no objective and consistent foundation to judge results because results are the mechanism used to judge the action itself. A popular form of utilitarianism is situation ethics, first proposed by Joseph Fletcher in his book by the same name. Now, Fletcher acknowledges that situation ethics is essentially utilitarianism, but modifies the pleasure principle and calls it the agape or love principle. Fletcher developed his ethical system as an alternative to two extremes, legalism and antinomianism. The legalist is like the Pharisees at the time of Jesus, who had all sorts of laws and regulations, but no heart. They emphasize the law over love. Antinomians are like the libertines in Paul's day who promoted their lawlessness. Now, the foundation of situation ethics is what Fletcher calls the law of love. In a sense, love replaces the law. Now, Fletcher even quotes certain biblical passages to make his case. For example, he quotes Romans 13:8, which says, "Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another, for he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the law." Another passage Fletcher quotes is Matthew 22, verse 37 to 40. Christ said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." Now, proponents of situation ethics would argue that these summary verses require only one absolute, the law of love. No other universal laws can be derived from this commandment to love. Even the Ten Commandments are subject to exceptions based upon the law of love. Situation ethics also accepts the view that only the ends can justify the means. The means cannot self-justify themselves. Fletcher believes that no act apart from its foreseeable consequences has any ethical meaning whatsoever. Now, Joseph Fletcher tells the story of Lenin, who had become weary of being told that he had no ethics. After all, he used a very pragmatic and utilitarian philosophy to force communism on the people. So some of those around him accused him of believing that the end justifies the means. Finally, Lenin shot back, "If the end does not justify the means, then in the name of sanity and justice, what does?" Now, like utilitarianism, situation ethics attempts to define morality with an end justifies the means philosophy. According to Fletcher, the law of love requires the greatest love for the greatest number of people in the long run. But as we'll see tomorrow, we do not always know how to define love, and we do not always know what will happen in the long run. This week we've been talking about utilitarianism as well as situation ethics, and today I would like to conclude by discussing some of the problems with situation ethics. Perhaps the biggest problem with situation ethics is that the law of love is too general. People are going to have different definitions of what love is. Moreover, the context of love varies from situation to situation, and certainly varies from culture to culture. So it is even difficult to derive moral principles that can be known and applied universally. Situations and circumstances change, and so the moral response may change as well. The admonition to do the loving thing is even less specific than to do what is the greatest good for the greatest number. It has about as much moral force as to say to do the good thing or to do the right thing. Without a specific definition, it is nothing more than a moral platitude. Second, situation ethics suffers from the same problem of utilitarianism in predicting consequences. In order to judge the morality of an action, we have to know the results of the action we are about to take. Often we cannot know the consequences. Joseph Fletcher acknowledges we can't always guess the future, even though we are always being forced to try. But according to his ethical system, we have to know the results in order to make a moral choice. Otherwise, our action would, by definition, be immoral. Situation ethics also assumes that the situation will determine the meaning of love. Yet love is not determined by the particulars of our circumstance, but merely conditioned by them. The situation does not determine what is right or wrong. The situation instead helps us determine which biblical command applies in that particular situation. From the biblical perspective, the problem with utilitarianism and situation, they ultimately provide no consistent moral framework. Situation ethics also permits us to do evil to achieve good. This is totally contrary to the Bible. For example, Proverbs 14 verse 12 says that there is a way which seems right to a man, but in its end is the way of death. The road to destruction is paved with good intentions. This is a fundamental flaw with an end justifies the means ethical system. In Romans 6:1, Paul says, "Are we to continue sinning so that grace may increase?" His response is, "May it never be." Utilitarianism attempts to provide a moral system apart from God's revelation in the Bible, but in the end, it does not succeed.